Federation of Sportsmen et al. Versus Birmingham et al. All right, good morning, Mr. Townsend. You reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. You can begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. Brady Tunsing on behalf of appellants. This case asks whether Vermont can impose a blanket 72-hour ban on the acquisition of firearms by persons the state concedes are qualified to purchase and possess them. Citizens who have already passed every background check and satisfied every legal requirement.
Could the state have added to its background check a mental health check that required some certification by a mental health practitioner?
The state does not have
but could it?
Could it create a background check system?
That involved an inquiry into mental health?
I think they probably could. I'm not.
Well, if they did, wouldn't that take more than 3 days probably to happen? Somebody walked into a gun dealer, and the gun dealer checks a computer and says, oh, I see you have no criminal record, but the state has a requirement also as part of the background check that you get checked out by some mental health practitioner.
So it would be appended to the normal background check process?
Yeah, it would be a part of the background process.
Yeah.
I mean, New York, for example, has a much more elaborate background process than the one in Vermont, and we upheld that as constitutional.
That's true, and this court has upheld delays that are incidental to a verification process.
Can I just ask about this mental health thing? I mean, you know, the Supreme Court in Rahimi is very focused on there being an individualized determination of dangerousness. It seems like if a state had a requirement that assumed everybody was dangerous until they got an evaluation before they obtained the gun, that'd be a very different case and probably not okay, right? So a state might be able to deny firearms to somebody who has indications of mental instability or something, but to presume that everybody is mentally unstable and therefore needs to undergo some kind of psychiatric evaluation does not seem individualized in the way the court has said is required.
Well, I think that's what this waiting period does. It assumes that everybody is...
That's why Judge Lynch asked the question, and that's why I was kind of surprised by your answer. But it would be, it seems like your argument would be there needs to be a more individualized determination. So, like, for the drunkenness laws, they were about people who showed signs of drunkenness, right? But I don't think you would say that a state could impose a law that just kind of assumes everybody might be drunk and therefore has to sit in a drunk tank for 48 hours. To make sure that they're no longer inebriated before they obtain the gun, right?
Right, and Judge Menasche, I may have misunderstood Judge Lynch's question. I understood it as a question as to whether the state could have its own verification and background process to see if someone is eligible to possess firearms.
Like a qualification could be that there isn't something in their record that indicates mental instability. There isn't a prior adjudication of it, right?
Right, I think the federal system already imposes that sort of check on
but
eligibility.
I'm puzzled by the notion of assuming that everyone is mentally unstable. When you say that the applicant for a gun license needs to have a background check to show that he's not a criminal, we're not assuming that everyone is a criminal. We're checking to see whether they are.
We're checking to see whether they're eligible to possess.
We're checking to see whether they, and the ineligibility is some sort of indication of dangerousness that typically takes the form of some kind of criminal record. But we assume everyone's a criminal, because why would we assume that? Why would we have to ask? Why would we have to check? We're checking precisely to find out. So I'm not sure I understand the difference, that that some hypothetical requirement that we make some verification of somebody's mental stability would be assuming that everyone is mentally unstable. It would be imposing a requirement that we determine whether they're mentally stable or not.
But we're not doing that here. What we're doing is imposing a delay for the sake of delay.
Well, it's not for the sake of delay. It's for the sake of, in case someone is mentally unstable, maybe they would think over the issue of suicide.
Well,
why is a 3-day waiting period imposed for that purpose something different than what could amount to a month-long delay doing a more elaborate background check than just a simple criminal record check?
But they're not doing that. They're not doing anything. They're just, there's nothing being administered. There's nothing being reviewed. It's just treating everybody as though they have a mental illness.
So if they impose something more onerous, that might be okay, so long as it required some steps to be taken.
If it was part of a verification process, an eligibility process, this court has approved those sorts of delays when it's tied to...
But it's incidental to the actual verification. I guess the answer to this question is, isn't the answer to this question that you wouldn't resolve the idea in the abstract? It's just the question about whether we have a tradition of subjecting somebody to a mental health evaluation before, or something analogous to it, before allowing them to purchase a gun, right?
What's happening in the background check, Judge Menasche, is, as you know, is that they're looking to see if someone is eligible to exercise the right. And I think that this court in NYSFA versus James, Gazzola, and Giambalvo, we're looking at just that. Is the state doing something? Is something being administered here, and what's happening? And
I mean,
nothing.
But you get the intuition that Judge Lynch is suggesting, which is, if we could subject you to a mental health evaluation, that's not very different from sort of saying, well, you know, you might be acting impulsively, and so therefore we're going to require everybody to engage in a cooling off period. I mean, I would have thought the objection was you need more of an individualized determination. So in Rahimi, it's about somebody who has a history of domestic violence, right?
Right.
But there's been an adjudication of that. It seems like it would be very different if the state passed a law that said, well, anybody who has a domestic partner and is trying to get a gun needs to first undergo a site visit and an interview with the partner before the gun can be transferred, right? That would be more of a burden, and it would be less individualized.
It would be less individualized. I don't know. I mean, I think the problem with this waiting period is that it's been assessed as temporarily rather than the scope. And I think Ortega raised that issue when it talked about there's no limiting principle to this waiting period.
I see. So what you're saying is, well, if there's reason to do an evaluation for impulsiveness, maybe you could undergo that evaluation, but the state says, regardless of whether we're confident that you are of sound mind or whatever, nevertheless, there's still just delay for the sake of delay.
Court in Nguyen, when it was evaluating the one gun a month law in California, raised the problem of just looking at something temporarily, limiting a constitutional right based on time was unacceptable, and the court said it was unaware of any other constitutional right where that would be acceptable, and it found that there was a meaningful constraint on the right, on the Second Amendment right, which is the same doctrine that this court endorsed.
This question, I mean, I know that we don't do interest balancing anymore, but just as a thought experiment, I was thinking about how this would fare under the earlier regime. So it might be that, this kind of burden on purchasing a firearm would be subject to intermediate scrutiny or something like that. Does it seem like it would be over-inclusive, right? So if your concern is impulsive gun purchases where somebody might engage in violence or suicide, there is a class of people who have a whole bunch of guns already, right? And so at the very least, there's a less restrictive alternative where you could narrow it to first-time gun owners or something like that.
I guess if we were still allowed to do interest balancing, they might be allowed to...
I guess my thought is just, if it's sort of clear that under the prior regime it's infirm, it would be pretty surprising if the Bruin regime, which is generally understood to be more protective of Second Amendment rights, would be more permissive, right?
I can't imagine under the Bruin regime where you introduce the lower court engage in interest balancing. The court in Ortega was concerned about interest balancing. The court in Nguyen was concerned about interest balancing. Because if 3 days is okay, why not 6 days or 30 days? I'm sure the state could conjure up an expert that would come in and say that 180 days would be a really good policy.
Can I go back to Judge Lynch's hypothetical to make sure I understand what your position is? So if the state said, we're going to do some kind of check for mental health, we're going to check various records in the state, and it takes 3 days, let's just assume it can't be done instantaneously, it's going to take 3 days for them to check to see whether or not there's any red flags for mental health, that would be okay?
It would be okay if the state had its own licensing process where the state was trying to see if the person was an eligible person. The difference here is they've already made that determination in the waiting period is imposed just for the sake of delay. And there's
but they have an eligibility that they're still concerned about mental health. That's a legitimate thing to be concerned about, right?
But they aren't checking it. They aren't checking
so
mental
it's
health.
It's the fact that they're not doing anything affirmative. They're just waiting.
They're just waiting.
So suppose, let me give you another hypothetical. Suppose you would agree that like gun safety courses, they're constitutional, right? Saying somebody before they get a gun has to take a safety course is okay. Right?
I would agree this court has approved safety courses.
So if there's not a gun safety course, but a mental health course where someone before they purchased the gun had to go in and some discussion about if you have suicidal tendencies, you should seek help, that would be okay?
I would have to, the devil would be in the details, Your Honor,
so
but.
I don't know, a 2-hour course where they're gonna have people come in before they give them a gun and before they get a gun. They have to do that. Wouldn't that be consistent with making sure that it's going to be a law-abiding, responsible person who's getting the gun?
It may be, but that's not what's happening here. This is simply the delay.
Isn't the way the Bruin framework would, I mean, we're just talking about all these things in the abstract, but isn't the way the thing would work? I mean, earlier you said the prior cases where we say delay is okay, the delay is incidental to something else the state is doing. So then the question would be, is it permissible or not for the state to deny firearms to somebody who fails some kind of mental health check? And that would entail the Bruin analysis about whether there's an analog. But you would say, if the delay is incidental to that, everything turns on whether that is permissible, right? But here the delay is imposed as a blanket matter, not in service of something else, so it's a direct burden on the ownership, right?
If it was in service of verification, Judge Menasche, if it was part of a verification process to see if that person was eligible, then it would fall under the meaningfully constrained test that this court employs and also abusive ends test. And the court would look at it to see if it infringed on the Second Amendment.
But there's some conditions of eligibility that might not be okay, right? Like they might impose also, like they might impose, say only people of a certain political affiliation can own guns. Like there probably wouldn't be a historical analog for that. So like there would be a substantive challenge to the condition. But the point is that if the delay is incidental to administering the condition, then everything turns on the permissibility of the condition. Right. But here you're saying there just is an automatic delay regardless of whether you've determined the person is qualified or not.
There's no determination, and under this court's law, that would plug into the meaningful constraint test and to see if it was being put to abusive ends. And then it would go into Bruin step two if it was found to infringe on the Second Amendment right, the core right.
All right, thank you. We'll get from the state of Vermont.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Bridget Acey for the defendants, appellees. This court should affirm the district court's refusal to enjoin Vermont's 3-day waiting period for firearms acquisitions. Plaintiffs have not shown a likelihood of success on the merits because they cannot show that this brief delay in acquiring a firearm is a meaningful constraint on protected Second Amendment rights. They also have failed to show irreparable harm.
Why is that the analysis? So, like, you know, it's got to be that if you have the right to keep and bear arms, you can acquire the arms, right?
So, Your Honor, this court has addressed this point in both Vereen and in James. The court has recognized that the Bruin analysis has two steps. The first step under Bruin is, does the challenge law implicate conduct protected by the plain text of the Second Amendment? And in both Vereen and in NYSF versus James, the court held that commercial firearms regulations are presumptively constitutional and regulations
well,
on the means of
broader
acquire-
than a commercial application, right? If I own a gun and I give it away to someone, I'm bound by the same requirement.
If it's a gift outside of the immediate family and not to prevent immediate harm, then the gift has to be facilitated by a federally licensed firearms dealer and does fall here. But that's really a slice of the application, and there's no as-applied challenge to that.
There are several slices that are problematic, right? As Judge Menasche asked, at least one of the plaintiffs here alleges that he is a licensed firearm owner and has an arsenal at home, and he wants to add to that arsenal by buying another gun. And he has to wait 3 days because he may be impulsively buying that gun to kill himself when he's got a whole gun safe filled with guns at home that if he wanted to kill himself, he could do it.
The waiting period does apply to his purchases as well. But again, it's in that situation, it's somewhat difficult to see how the waiting period is meaningfully constraining his core protected Second Amendment right, which is the right of armed self-defense.
It doesn't protect his particular right to own this particular gun that he wants to buy. Is that the point?
Well, again, the test under Vereen and NYSF versus James is for regulations that impact acquisition, which is, the court has said, not in the plain text of the Second Amendment, but is an ancillary right. The test is different.
So I kind of get Vereen. So Vereen, it's a regulation on the way gun shops are supposed to be set up. Right, it's not really a direct regulation on the arms bearer, right? It's like, so we're evaluating whether the spillover effects of how a state regulates the commercial enterprise that sell guns might implicate the eventual purchaser. So it's sort of an indirect burden, right?
Trying to trust my memory, I believe that's described in Gazzola, Your Honor, and that Vereen was the federal restriction.
Oh, right.
On
so Vereen is the one about the interstate trade. Well, let me just actually start with Gazzola, right? So that's where we get this idea. So it's sort of indirect burdens, and you get how not everything that's indirect is actually a burden of the right, right? And then we have the state where there's the delay associated with administering the background check, but the background check itself is not challenged. And so there, the delay is also incidental to something that is admittedly okay, right?
In James. In James, well as in Giambo.
And so then in this other case, the Vereen, right? I don't know if it's right or not, but it says, look, the main way to get guns is just unimpaired. And so this is some other avenue. Maybe that's not right or not. But like this case that we have here, right? It's a regulation that applies to the actual transaction where the arms bearer obtains the gun. Like, isn't that just a burden on procuring, like a direct burden on procuring guns? And if we start talking about whether it's meaningful or not meaningful, then aren't we just doing an analysis about whether like it's really important enough to cause the person a delay or not? And then we're doing a kind of interest balancing that we're not supposed to do.
No, Your Honor, I disagree that this court's meaningful constraint test is interest balancing, and it is not looking at a means-end analysis.
What is the analysis that we do? So certainly it seems to me in the First Amendment context, if we said, all right, the city decides whether you can have a permit to conduct a protest, but we're very worried that you might say something you'll later regret, you might defame somebody, you might like inspire people to violence, so we're going to have a cooling off period where, like, even if we know that you're eligible for a protest permit, we're going to wait, a week before you're allowed to do your protests. We probably wouldn't tolerate that because we say a delay of even a little bit for constitutional rights is unacceptable. So if we have that principle in the Second Amendment context, if we're talking about whether it's a meaningful burden or not a meaningful burden, are we just sort of deciding whether it's more important for the person to have the gun or it's more important for the government to accomplish its policy objective?
So, Your Honor, I think two responses to that. So first, with respect to the analogy to First Amendment rights, although those analogies can only go so far in this context because this court has upheld, as has the Supreme Court, and certainly this court upheld regulations of the right to carry arms through licensing processes and restrictions on where they can be carried that clearly are not analogous to the way the First Amendment
exactly what happens there has to happen in the Second Amendment context. I'm just saying you could understand this that way. You could say, actually, you know, any kind of delay that isn't you know, justified by historical analog or so on is a violation of the right, and so therefore that is serious. But once you enter the meaningfully constrained analysis, then you're kind of balancing, you know, the right to exercise the Second Amendment rights against what the state is trying to accomplish.
I disagree, Your Honor, that the meaningful constraint test is a balancing test. And again, with respect to the delay point, this court has held in multiple contexts that, including in Giambolvo, that there is not an immediate right to acquire a gun under the Second Amendment.
The delay is incidental to some other lawful measure that is based upon some type of individualized determination, like a background check or something like that that's going on. We don't have that here. We've never said you can delay, you know, up to 30 days for whatever reason you want, right? You would agree with that. Like a delay of 30 days is a meaningful constraint. You would agree with that, right?
I agree, Your Honor, that the court has not said that delay for any purpose is permissible,
right.
So
what is the lawful measure that this delay is linked to? If we assume that it has to have something has to be going on, that just delay for delay is not enough, what would it be?
I mean, the legislature did not enact this for delay for no purpose. The legislature enacted this waiting period because there is good science that shows that interrupting that
determination going on, it's making everybody wait without any individualized determination, right? You can't point to any other measure similar to this where the Supreme Court has suggested that that's okay, right?
I can't point to a U.S. Supreme Court precedent on this point, Your Honor, but I would say that, for the example, I believe this court's recent decision in Zerka, the court observed that the Supreme Court's decisions have really only addressed much broader, overly restrictive rights on the rights to bear arms and the right to carry and to bear arms. And here, it's a very short delay. And as the First Circuit, I think the First Circuit got this point right in the comparison to licensing requirements, as we argue in our brief, that the how and the why here are very similar. It's a screening tool. And as the First Circuit said in Beckwith, when states impose, instead of a waiting period, impose a licensing requirement, those delays apply to everyone. So there's no individual assessment for that.
It's not a screening tool. It's not to determine whether this person is eligible to have the gun, because the delay applies to everybody the same way, right?
It applies to everyone in the same way, Your Honor, in the same way that the delays associated with background checks and licensing requirements also apply to everyone.
Isn't the delay in the background check incidental to doing the background check? I mean, maybe there's something about the background check that is permissible or impermissible, but that's a separate question. If the delay is incidental to something that's permissible, then the delay itself is not the burden. But this is an automatic delay, right?
It's an automatic delay that, again, is intended to interrupt what is a real problem, which is the impulsive acquisition of firearms that does have fatal consequences. So it is serving a purpose. It's very minimal. And I think if I could just take a step back in the understanding of this court's test, which is the meaningful constraint test, this court has upheld in New York a package of restrictions that ban open carry, require a license for concealed carry, has held that delays of up to 30 days to get the license are not presumptively unconstitutional, has upheld training courses, has upheld restrictions on sensitive places that include mass transit, Times Square.
But these are all different kinds of things.
I understand.
And they
all
have different rationales, and they have different problems associated with them and different kinds of evaluations. But all of the licensing, I think one of the things that is an issue here is that unlike the limits at issue in Gazzola, isn't this really, it imposes a requirement on the seller, but that's just the flip side of a restriction on the buyer. It's in that respect like a background check or like some other kind of attribute of a must-grant licensing scheme. It impedes the ability of the buyer to get a gun in a direct way, as opposed to just, if you impose an insurance requirement on a gun shop, maybe one out of five gun shops goes out of business, and that makes it that much harder for somebody to buy a gun or something like that. That's very indirect.
I agree.
This is a direct restraint on somebody's ability to buy a gun, isn't it?
And it's only direct in the sense it's at a single moment in time. And Gazzola recognized that convenience was not, inconvenience is not enough to...
Wouldn't we have to do the analysis this way, which is to recognize that this is a direct effect on the right to bear arms? And then the question is it sufficiently analogous to background checks, which have been upheld as consistent with our tradition, that it falls under the same basic rubric?
We don't agree that the court has to reach step two, given the court's application of the meaningful constraint test, but we certainly agree that the statute should be upheld under step two. And if I could just go back to my holistic point, and I apologize if I took too long to getting to it, but my point was in Vermont, in comparison to New York, this is essentially the requirement. So when looking
it's
at how the meaning...
It's easier to get a gun under this requirement.
And you don't need
Vermont.
A license to carry. You can open carry. You can concealed carry.
Well, those are different things. But just in terms of, I decide I want a gun for perfectly legitimate reasons. I'm not going to carry it in place where I'm not allowed to carry it and all those other things. Just, I want to get a gun. What you're saying essentially is it's still easier and quicker for me to buy a gun in Vermont than it is for me to buy a gun in New York under the conditions that have been upheld.
That was the point I was attempting to reach in terms of the ability to exercise the rights. There is no meaningful constraint here. It comes down to a matter of convenience with this brief delay, which the legislature had good reason to impose. If I could, I realize that my time is up, if I could just briefly address the irreparable harm point.
Sure. Wait, just in terms of the analogs, I don't know if I heard an answer to the point that I think Judge Bianco made, which is that the analogs about whether somebody's drunk or whether, you know, an incidental delay to a background check, those are determinations about whether this person is in the category of people that are not eligible to have a gun, whereas here it's a blanket delay that applies to everybody. And I think he was suggesting that there isn't an analog for that kind of a burden. So what's your response to that?
We don't dispute that there's not a historical twin from the 18th or 19th century, but that is not what the test requires. It's about analyzing.
It's like a historical cousin.
It's a historical cousin, and it's analyzing. It's analogizing from principles. With respect to irreparable harm, if I could just make two quick points. First of all, this case was stayed at the request of plaintiffs. The appeal was stayed voluntarily on appeal for a year. There is also no evidence in the record of any plaintiff who is facing irreparable harm from this brief waiting period. They could have purchased guns 100 times over while the appeal was pending and any number of weapons. We think here, again, that they failed to make out the case
for an injunction. But we normally say for irreparable harm that the deprivation of a constitutional right, even for a limited period of time, is irreparable harm. And so if we think that thought they had a likelihood of success, which means that they've shown a likelihood of a deprivation of a constitutional right, why wouldn't that establish the irreparable harm?
Well, this court said in Lamont that it was not the case that every allegation of a constitutional violation necessarily amounted to irreparable harm. The court did not end up deciding Lamont on that point, but that was what the court recognized. And I think here, particularly where the plaintiffs have agreed to a stay of the case and the district court asked to have this appeal stayed for a year and can't point to any plaintiff who is imminently threatened with harm by a waiting period that has elapsed 100 times over while the case is pending, that this is an exceptionally weak case for showing irreparable harm. The case could have proceeded in the district court on the merits and have been resolved on the merits in the ordinary course.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Thompson, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. The waiting period is not a commercial regulation because it does not involve a condition or qualification on the purchaser or seller. There are no conditions that can be met to escape this law, and it's not qualified because it applies to everybody. This court said in James that laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms are laws that impose modest administrative burdens. A waiting period is not an administrative burden. There is no administration happening. In James and Jambalvo, things are being administered.
And also on the meaningful constraint point in James, it was instantaneous. It was an instantaneous check, right? In terms of, that's why in the James case, we found that it was not a meaningful constraint because it was instantaneous, right?
instantaneous, but we get in trouble when we measure things by time because that invites an interest balancing. We can objectively measure things, but in this case, it should be measured by scope because it totally deprives the citizens of Vermont of their Second Amendment rights.
So it should be measured by scope for step one or step two or both? Is that what's the point you're making?
Well, for both. In step one, when we're looking at when the problem that Beckwith ran into at the appeals level was that they just measured it by time. They didn't measure it by the infringement on the right. The same thing happened with the trial court here. In Nguyen and Ortega, the courts properly measured the scope. Because they recognize that if they're measuring how long the deprivation is, in Nguyen it was one gun per 30 days. And they said, well, that's, first of all, you're entitled to arms, not arm.
I mean, just in terms of how the scope point cashes out, is this your argument? Like at step one, obtaining a firearm is just covered by the text because you have to be able to obtain it to keep it barren. So it's a necessary predicate act, right?
I think common sense dictates
and
that.
So then on the second one, what's the relevance of the scope? The relevance of the scope is there isn't a historical analog because there isn't a historical regulation that denies obtaining the firearm to all people as distinct from some kind of individualized determination that you meet a qualification.
There is no historical analog that matches a waiting period, a purposeless waiting period. There's nothing even remotely like it until the 1990s when we had the Brady Act, and that only lasted for 4 years until NICS was put in place and at the federal level.
It's not a purposeless waiting period, right? The state identifies a purpose. They say the reason is to prevent impulsive violence. Wouldn't your position be like there isn't a tradition of preventing impulsive violence in this way, and so that just is not a permissible restriction?
I think that forces us back into interest balancing. And
I'm not saying that it's not tailored to the government interest in preventing impulsive violence. I'm just saying this doesn't look like any historical regulation of firearms ownership.
Well,
either in purpose or restriction.
Well, when nothing is happening on the government side, it is delay for delay's sake, and that's what Ortega found problematic. That's what Nguyen found problematic. There is no objective way to measure why. If 3 days is okay, why not 6 days or 60 days? There's no limiting principle to this.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Reserve decision. Have a good day.